It's about 95 degrees, and the rain is torrential here at the muddy edge of the Lamanic River. But that hasn't stopped the mosquitoes from buzz-bombing under the sweaty edge of the hood of my plastic poncho. Those insects, unfortunate enough to land, are now stuck in the gum of perspiration and insect repellent on my forehead. We've just driven 5 hours along the only paved two-lane road in Borneo, a long slash of blacktop between the jungle and the sea. Our guide, Zan, an Iban tribesperson himself, has used the time well, prepping us for the visit.
The python that we might find in this jungle, yeah, is the worst enemy of the Iban people, yeah? And, of course, they cook it for a very nice dinner. It's very nice.
He says. I say. But my is followed by a question mark. And that question mark pops into the air in 30-second silent bursts again and again. Have I made a mistake coming here to a land of 1,500 parasites, Japanese encephalitis, peculiar and unrefrigerated foods? Will it really be worth the thousands of miles and the 27 hours crammed inside an airplane? Am I needlessly risking the health and safety of my only child for the sake of finding a mother-daughter bonding moment that takes place outside of a shopping mall? And I don't mean to be rude, but at this moment, it's not a snack of python Devorah and I are longing for. It's perhaps a few moments of rest before heading out on the churning river below. And while I'm extraordinarily grateful to be here at this very minute, I'm positively comatose for lack of an espresso. I may not be able to see 2 feet in front of me because of the downpour, but one thing is brilliantly clear. I'm not likely to run across a cafe on the river we're about to head out on. For the past 2 months, I've been preparing for this trip, packing and repacking supplies, powerful insect repellent, antibiotics, antidiarrheals, waterproof matches, toilet paper. Devorah has been packing too. 3 matching jungle outfits and black strappy sandals with a heel. And getting into the rough plank longboat that's just pulled up for us is going to be a challenge in those shoes, not only because of the 6-inch deep mud, but the angle that it takes to position ourselves into a craft that's no wider than our hips. 6 of us, including 2 depressingly chipper unilingual German boomers, are lined up now in an ancient boat. 6 soggy peas in an open pod, powered by an outboard at the back and a wiry Iban youth with a bamboo pole at the front. The Lamanic is muddy, it's twisted. Huge trees drip vines over brown eddies. We veer sharply back and forth from one side of the river to the other. We dodge rocks, fallen trees, floating branches, small rapids. Some sections are so suddenly shallow, we have to yank the motor up and pull madly. The Iban call the Lamanic a 5-night river, 5 days and nights to go the length. For us, it will be a 1-hour river, if we live, Devorah reminds me. As we glide around the next turn, we look up a 20-foot embankment and watch as tiny figures become full-size humans, dogs, roosters. A stream of dark, mostly slender women and men are walking out of the jungle into a clearing around a low, long wood and bamboo building. They have straw baskets on their backs full of green, bushy stalks, which I'm told will be our supper. There may also be turtle or other meat snagged with a blowgun or sliced and diced with the long daggers hanging from the men's waist. Just getting in and out of the 2-foot-wide sliver of a boat in the mud was a challenge. Getting up to the veranda of the 90-foot longhouse was another. The house sits on stilts about a dozen feet above the ground to accommodate the pigs rooting around underneath. And like houses on the coast of the Carolinas, to give the occupants a half a chance to survive in the event of flooding. We balance our way up the 45-degree angle made by a notched log that's anchored into the mud at one end and leaning against the veranda at the other. At this moment, I actually quite appreciate my daughter's fashion sense, and I'm thinking some spiky heels might just give me that kind of crampon grip I'll need here to avoid an impromptu visit to the pigs below. We step right into the half light of a late afternoon coffee clatch. Babies hanging in hammocks from the rafters, elderly people dozing on straw mats beside young and middle-aged women weaving, sorting brownish thumb-sized wild berries, and plucking corn kernels from dried cobs.
We do it like this, one by one, one by one. Remove the kernel from the cob, and see, this is what we feed the chicken and the pigs.
For a second, I flash on my cyber-stressed daily routine one river and several oceans away from here. I'm imagining the phones, faxes, email, doorbell ringing, beeping, whining, buzzing, and alerting no one right now in my empty home and office. Chimina, a gray-haired woman sitting on the mat nearby, seems to have read my mind.
All time of day is the same for us because we keep on working. Time isn't important for us. Early in the morning, we wake up, and early in the morning, we start doing the cooking. After the cooking, then we feed the chickens, feed the animals. Then we go into the jungle. We have just started to clear and plant for the season.
And what about you, they ask? How come I still have my teeth? Why isn't my daughter married yet? And would I please explain how I get their voices to come out of my tape recorder? I'm stuck on all counts. And then the conversation switches to seeds. And did I bring any? And what kind do I plant where I live? And would I like to see the rest of the house?
As you see, just in front of you, this is the old skull, yeah, believed to be more than 100 years ago. It is the trophy of yesteryear's head hunting. You can see here is they smoke it, keep it inside the basket here. Well, we have 1, 2, 3. It's 6 here, hanging here. So this family have 6 trophy. Yeah, another family have 8. And the chief might have more.
I knew ahead about the human skulls, the net bags of family heirloom enemy heads taken in politics and war regularly before the 1960s. I knew the Iban, my lovely hosts of the moment, had been headhunters. What I didn't know was the exact intercultural protocol about bringing up this most remarkable fact, but I'd soon find out.
So this is the room of the chief. Yeah. I mentioned to you that it's quite easy to identify the room of the chief. Yeah, if you see the rafter, the skull hanging from the rafter, then there is the room of the chief.
Indeed, there's the chief's door, a ragged poster of a Filipino cover band, an electric wall clock with a cord to nowhere, and a huge shield on the wall. First the shaman, a stringy tattooed fellow in a twisted sarong and a faded Lacoste shirt, emerges. He's smoking a cigar. And then the chief. He's wearing a once stylish golf shirt and cutoffs, and the holes in his lengthy earlobes are big enough for me to slip my big pen right through. Like the shaman, he's also drenched in blue tattoos from his flip-flop deck toes to his chin.
That shield over there on the wall, can you tell me about that?
That shield belonged to my father. That is what my father used for head hunting. My father is an Iban, and my father was doing the head hunting against the same people.
But the chief has a different agenda. What kind of fish do I have in my country? How big are the trees where I live? Do people cut trees? If my river is covered with ice, I'd shown him a picture of the St. Lawrence in the winter, then where do the fish go? Is the headman of my country a good man? Oops. Heads in a basket might be a safer subject.
It is a sign of bravery, and it is also a sign of respect. Yeah. Once we have this skull, it means that our grandfather, they are great heroes.
As fascinating as all this is, I'm exhausted. The rain, the rapids, the river, the crowing, the nonstop chatting of my animated hosts. But the night is young for the Iban. They're the original party animals, especially when loopy tourists from other lands bumble out of the jungle. We couldn't refuse their cups of fermented rice drink and their insistence that we sing and dance, too. I prepared Michael Row Your Boat Ashore Hallelujah, but my plan dissolved as I was yanked up on the dance mat to join the women of a certain age in a dance that involved some tiptoeing combined with a kind of languorous baby bird kind of hand flapping. And so we danced. I in my overpriced nylon Velcro, waterproof and never wrinkled, dry and 30-second jungle trek outfit. My host in a combination of traditional fabrics and what looked like Woolworth's Christmas decorations. Devorah, as befitting a 16-year-old, was burning with embarrassment at my performance. That is, until the Longhouse teen set got her dancing, too. And then I did my age-appropriate thing, too. I beamed. The five dancers doing a headhunting dance, which I was assured doubles as a welcome dance, looks pretty traditional to me, but the chief confided he's worried.
I'm not certain about the change that might take place in the future. Yeah? If I may die, then I don't know what will happen to my children, whether they believe in traditional or they believe in a modern way of life. I'm not sure.
I do see the changes the chief refers to. There's a small humming generator that can power a light in case a river doctor has to come for a medical emergency. And there are a couple of chainsaws in the village. The chief is also worried that full body tattoos have lost their cachet. Tattoos are the Iban's most profound sign of manhood, and they function in spiritual terms as an actual torch, an illumination to make one's way into the dark after death. But as the chief's son tells me, the tattoos no longer get the girls. But hospitality, a tradition that has outlived even headhunting, is alive and well.
We like visitors to come to our longhouse, and we will offer what we have. We will slaughter chicken, we will offer food, whatever we have, we share with them.
And that's just the beginning. The party can go on all night. You drink a lot to make your hosts happy. They tell stories, you're called on to tell your tale, sing your song, or even show your own tattoos. Even when the Iban finally fall asleep, the jungle is noisy. We slept badly but happily under a splash of torn mosquito netting. We'll go back. We'll stay longer. But before we do that, I'll think a lot about and try to answer the chief's questions, not just for him, but for myself. How big are the trees in my country? Where do the fish go when the river freezes over? How does my tape recorder actually capture voices? And is the chief of my government a good man? In Sarawak, Malaysia, on the island of Borneo, I'm Judith Ritter for The Savvy Traveler.